Hey there, are you sitting down? Good, because Wayfair's end of season sale is here and you can shop it from your couch. It's Wayfair's Labor Day clearance and it's on now. Right now, you can score up to 70% off everything home at Wayfair, like up to 50% off outdoor furniture and decor, and up to 70% off area rugs, plus amazing doorbuster deals and 24-hour surprise flash deals on Wayfair home finds in every style. And get it all with fast shipping on everything right to your door. From furniture to faucets, this is your last chance of the season to score huge deals at Wayfair. Don't let the final days of summer pass you by without shopping these end-of-season savings. So don't wait. Like summer, these savings won't last. Head to Wayfair.com today to score up to 70% off everything home. Celebrate your holiday weekend with can't-miss savings before they run out. Shop Wayfair's Labor Day clearance now through September 2nd at Wayfair.com.
Wayfair, every style, every home.
At KFC, everyday value meets big flavor. That means getting six crispy pieces of delicious dark meat drums and thighs, plus four biscuits, all for just $10 with our Dine and Dash deal. All that juicy, original recipe chicken for only $10 every day. Now that's finger-lickin' good. Hurry into KFC and taste the deal we're cooking up. Limited time only. Prices and participation may vary. While supplies last, tax, tip, and fees extra. Not available on third-party ordering platforms.
Story number one. When my parents left for their vacation, I thought it would be nice to have the whole house to myself. I wasn't scared of staying alone. In fact, I liked the quiet. The first night went by fine, but on the second night, I felt restless. Around midnight, I decided to take the car out for a drive. The streets would be empty, and I thought it would help me shake off the weird uneasiness I'd been feeling all evening. The car was in the garage, and as I opened the door, the air inside felt heavier than usual. It was humid, like a wet cloth pressed against my skin. The smell was different too, not the usual oil and rubber, but something faintly metallic, almost like rust mixed with damp wood. The moment I stepped in, I felt it, the distinct sensation of being watched. My body stiffened before I could even process why. I scanned the corners of the garage, moving the weak bulb's light with my eyes, but saw nothing. Just stacked boxes, a bicycle leaning against the wall, and the car waiting quietly in the center. I forced myself to laugh it off in my head. It was late, I was alone, and my brain was looking for excuses to feel scared. I got into the driver's seat and put the key into the ignition. The second I turned it, a loud crash rang out above me. My heart leapt as if someone had jumped on the roof of the car. I scrambled out, expecting to see a branch or maybe a stray animal, but the sight made no sense. The bulb holder from the ceiling had come loose and fallen squarely onto the roof of the car. The bulb shattered on impact, scattering glass like thin ice across the hood. It had never been loose before. I'd been in that garage countless times and never noticed it hanging out of place. Still, I told myself the screw might have rusted through, or vibrations from shutting the garage door could have loosened it. That explanation was just enough to calm me down. I swept the glass aside, pushed the broken holder away, and decided not to overthink it. The drive itself was strangely exhilarating. The empty roads at that hour looked endless, black tar ribbons reflecting faint streetlights. I pressed the accelerator harder than usual, letting the speed numb me. The wind rushed in through the open window, carrying the smell of night jasmine and distant burning leaves. For a moment, I forgot about the garage incident. By the time I got home, the house looked darker than before. Even with the porch light on, the windows were empty and black, as if they'd absorbed all the light around them. I parked the car and stepped out. That's when I saw it. Dangling from the rearview mirror inside my car was a small toy, a weird-looking one. It wasn't mine. I don't own any such thing. It was crudely made, almost like a doll, but smaller, with a round head, stitched smile, and hollow eyes. Its body was just cloth tied together, limbs hanging limply like some twisted rag puppet. I froze in place. I told myself maybe my friends were messing with me, though none of them had been near my house that night. Or maybe the toy had been inside the garage boxes, and it somehow got stuck on the mirror when I wasn't looking. But none of that explained how it ended up perfectly hanging there, as if it had always belonged. The longer I stared at it, the more I thought I heard something faint, a whisper thin like radio static, curling through the silence. It grew into words, or something that felt like words. my name stretched out, repeated, coaxing me closer. My skin prickled as if 100 pins were pressing into me. I reached in, intending to yank the thing off, but the instant my fingers brushed it, I felt my chest cave in, like all the air had been punched out of me. I gasped, but no sound came out. My vision spun, and in the blink of an eye, I was no longer at my house. I was standing in the middle of the road, the same road I had sped down earlier that night. My car was nowhere around me. My feet felt glued to the asphalt, heavy and unmovable. I could hear a low rumble growing louder behind me. When I turned, I saw it, a long truck, headlights blazing like twin suns, bearing down at full speed. The horn blared, rattling the ground, but I couldn't move. I clawed at the air, tried to force my body to jump aside, but nothing worked. The truck was only inches away, so close I could see the driver's face, frozen and pale. I shut my eyes. The blast of impact never came. When I opened them again, I was back inside the car. The toy was in my hand. I screamed, or at least I think I did, and flung it out of the window into the driveway. My heart felt like it was going to tear through my ribs. I rushed inside the house, locked every door, and didn't sleep for the rest of the night. For the next 2 days, I tried to convince myself it was a dream, maybe sleep deprivation mixed with stress. People hallucinate all the time when they're exhausted. Maybe I had blanked out at the wheel. Maybe the toy was just some leftover thing from the garage that I had mistaken in my state. I kept repeating those explanations until they almost sounded believable. On the third day, I went back into the garage to clean up the shattered bulb glass and replace the light. It was broad daylight, sunlight streaming through the cracks in the garage door, making the place feel safe again. I wiped down the hood of the car, careful to avoid cutting my hands on any remaining shards. That's when I saw it, hanging from the rearview mirror again. The same toy, exactly in the same spot, swaying gently as if it had been waiting all along. This time it looked worse. The stitched smile seemed broader, stretched, and the hollow eyes seemed darker, like they had been burnt in deeper. My breath went cold in my throat. I didn't touch it. I just shut the garage door and walked back into the house, pretending I hadn't seen anything. Even now, I try to tell myself maybe I'd thrown it short the first time, and somehow it bounced back through the window. Or maybe I never threw it out at all and my mind filled in the gaps. That's the only way I can function. But every time I pass by the garage now, I feel it. That heavy, pressing air. That quiet, static whisper. I know it's still in there, waiting. And I don't know how many more times it's going to come back. Story number two. I'm a 33-year-old guy, pretty rational. Never really been the type to buy into ghost stories or supernatural stuff. I like facts, explanations, cause and effect. But last winter, something happened that still makes me uncomfortable in my own house. I've tried brushing it off as fever dreams or just my imagination, but there are parts of it I can't explain away. It started when I caught the flu, not the mild kind either. This was the fever burning, body aching, can barely move type. Living alone meant I didn't have anyone checking in on me. So those few days were a haze of sweating under blankets, stumbling out of bed for water, and trying not to cough my lungs out. The first weird thing happened during one of those nights. It was around 2 a.m., and I woke up soaked, sheets damp, t-shirt clinging to me. My throat was so dry, I forced myself to get up for some water. I went to the bathroom, splashed my face, then shuffled back through the hallway that connects to my bedroom. There's a mirror on the wall there. I don't usually pay attention to it, especially at night, but this time I did. What I saw is hard to put into words. In the dim light from the bathroom, I saw myself, but behind me, tilted unnaturally like it was leaning too far, was a shadow. Long, black, too stretched out. It didn't move like a person. It looked like something thin, bending its neck over my shoulder. I spun around. The hallway was empty. When I looked back in the mirror, it was just me again. I blamed the fever. That was the obvious answer. I'd read somewhere that high fevers can cause hallucinations, so I told myself that's all it was. But the next night, it happened again. This time, when I passed the mirror, the shadow looked darker, more solid and closer. It was almost as if it was pressing in toward me. Its face wasn't clear, but the outline of something cloth-like, shapeless, sack-like, seemed draped over it. I forced myself to look away and go back to bed, but I couldn't sleep. Every creak of the house, every gust of wind against the windows, made me tense. By the third night, I was terrified to walk past the mirror. I tried to avoid it, but the layout of my house makes it impossible. I had to pass the hallway to get to the kitchen or bathroom. That night, I distinctly heard a sound that jolted me up. Glass shattering, like a window breaking somewhere inside the house. I rushed out, expecting to find a broken pane or a cold draft, but every window was intact. Still, the sound had been sharp, real. I couldn't explain it. The following morning, when I stumbled into the shower, I noticed a thin black smudge on my right shoulder. It looked almost like charcoal rubbed into the skin. I scrubbed at it until my skin turned red, but it didn't budge. The mark was faint but stubborn, almost like it was beneath the surface. Over the next week, little things kept piling up. The house started to feel wrong in subtle ways. Sometimes when I woke up, the doors or windows I'd sworn I had locked the night before were standing open. The front door once had the chain latch dangling loose even though I hadn't touched it. I'd walk into the kitchen and feel the faintest rush of air on the back of my neck, like someone had brushed past me. At night, when the fever made me drift in and out of sleep, I'd catch soft thuds, almost like slow, deliberate footsteps pacing across the living room.
Big news! Wayfair's end-of-season sale is here. It's Wayfair's Labor Day clearance. Right now, you can score up to 70% off everything home at Wayfair. Plus, amazing doorbuster deals and 24-hour surprise flash deals on home finds in every style. This is your last chance to score end-of-season savings, and it's happening now. Did we mention fast shipping on everything? Don't wait. Head to Wayfair.com today to score up to 70% off now through September 2nd.
Wayfair, every style, every home.
At KFC, everyday value meets big flavor. That means getting six crispy pieces of delicious dark meat drums and thighs, plus four biscuits, all for just $10 with our Dine and Dash deal. All that juicy, original recipe chicken for only $10 every day. Now that's finger-lickin' good. Hurry into KFC and taste the deal we're cooking up. Limited time only. Prices and participation may vary. While supplies last, tax, tip, and fees extra. Not available on third-party ordering platforms.
I'd forced myself to stay in bed, telling myself it was just the house settling. But the timing of those sounds always felt too measured, too intentional. And the mirror, that was the worst part. Every time I walked past, I could see it out of the corner of my eye. The shadow didn't just stay behind me anymore. It was closer, looming almost beside me. The sack-like shape of its face seemed tilted, as though it was staring directly into me, but only in the reflection. Once I thought I saw its hand, or something shaped like one, lifting slightly in the mirror, stretched too long, the fingers thin and tapering. I didn't stay long enough to confirm. I bolted back to bed and lay there until sunrise. After that, I started draping a blanket over the mirror at night. It didn't help the feeling, though. The house still carried that oppressive weight, like I wasn't alone. Even when the fever broke, the streak on my shoulder remained. It faded slightly, but never disappeared completely. If I turn my arm just right under the light, you can still see it, a faint, darkened smear on my skin. For weeks, I couldn't shake the feeling of being followed. Sometimes I'd find myself glancing at windows, half expecting to see someone staring in. The locks still seemed to unfasten themselves. My bedroom door creaked open twice during the night, despite me closing it tight. The air inside the house always felt heavy, charged like the seconds before a storm. Eventually, I convinced myself that I had been delirious from sickness, that maybe I'd left doors unlocked without realizing. Maybe the mark was just a bruise that looked strange under the light, but the unease stuck with me. 2 months later, I was finally feeling back to normal physically, but mentally the weight lingered. Then one night, while brushing my teeth, I noticed something that made my stomach drop. I'd left the blanket off the hall mirror earlier that day without realizing. As I leaned to spit into the sink, I caught the reflection behind me. Nothing unusual at first, just me and my t-shirt. But my shoulder in the reflection still had that black streak, darker than it looked on my actual skin. In the glass, it wasn't faint. It looked fresh, like ink smeared thick across me. I touched my real shoulder. The faint mark was there, but nothing close to how stark it looked in the mirror. I covered the mirror again immediately. Now, whenever I get sick, even with something as minor as a cold, I keep all the lights on at night and never ever leave that mirror uncovered. Maybe it's all psychological, maybe just fever-induced paranoia that stuck with me. That's what I keep telling myself. But I still avoid walking too close to that hallway wall. And sometimes when the house is especially quiet, I swear I hear the faint tap of something long and thin dragging against the glass beneath the blanket. The streak on my shoulder never fully went away, and I don't think it ever will. Story number three. I still don't know how to explain what happened that summer afternoon at my grandma's house. I was 15, my sister was 8, and we were just supposed to be spending a boring vacation in her little village. It was the middle of the day, around noon, and the sun was glaring outside, the type of heat where the roads shimmer. Inside, the ceiling fan buzzed lazily, and my sister and I sat in the living room watching cartoons on the old TV. That's when the knock came. It was sharp, almost urgent. I thought it might be a delivery man or some local villager coming by, so I got up while my sister stayed glued to the TV. When I pulled the door open, I didn't see anyone. Instead, a blast of cold air hit me square in the face, cold like stepping into a freezer. In the middle of June, in a village with no air conditioning, that made no sense. I leaned out and scanned the empty road. The hot wind carried dust, the fields stood still, and even the usual hum of cicadas seemed muted. Nothing. I shut the door. That's when it happened. The silence, not just quiet, the kind of silence that feels unnatural, like every single sound had been sucked out of the world. I turned around, and the TV was black. Not off, not showing static, just cracked, like the screen had been shattered from the inside. My sister was gone. There was no sound of her running, no footsteps, nothing. One moment she was there, and the next gone. My heart started racing, but in that weird silence, even my breathing sounded too loud. Then from somewhere above me came the scream. I can still hear it. It wasn't my sister's normal voice. It was stretched, guttural, like it came from her throat but didn't belong to her. Instinct took over, and I bolted for the staircase that led to the second floor. That staircase. It felt wrong the moment I stepped onto it. No matter how fast I climbed, I never seemed to reach the top. The narrow wooden steps kept going, stretching upwards like some endless tunnel. My legs burned, my lungs ached, but still the scream carried on above me. At some point, I wasn't even sure I was in my grandma's house anymore. The walls pressed in, darker and tighter, the air stinking of smoke and something sour like rotten milk. Finally, the top appeared. I stumbled up the last step, and that's when I saw her. My sister hung upside down, suspended in midair as if someone had tied invisible ropes around her ankles. She was sobbing, her arms flailing weakly, and holding her, or maybe just hovering behind her, was the woman. Her skin looked melted, like wax that had dripped and hardened again. Patches of raw flesh glistened wet, and where her eyes should have been were just hollow pits, black and bottomless. She didn't move, didn't blink, didn't even breathe. She just stared at me, and it felt like that stare carried weight, pressing into my chest, rooting me to the floor. Then my sister's sobs changed. The sound warped into deep, broken groans, like something inside her was trying to crawl out through her throat. I forced myself to move, to run forward, and as I did, the woman tilted her head back as if amused. My sister slipped. She fell toward the floor, her body twisting, and I barely managed to dive under her, catching her awkwardly against my shoulder. The impact knocked me down, but when I looked up again, the woman was gone, just gone. No footsteps, no smoke, no fading shadow. The room was empty except for the two of us. My sister clutched me, her tiny fingers digging into my shirt so hard I thought they'd tear the fabric. We didn't tell anyone, not my grandma, not our parents. It felt like the kind of thing you kept buried. Who would believe it anyway? A burned woman with hollow eyes dangling a child in midair? It sounded insane even in my own head. But it didn't end there. For weeks afterward, things followed us. Little things at first, charred scraps appearing in odd places, burned corners of paper in my school bag, blackened fragments of cloth under my pillow. My sister once found a half-melted doll's head on her bed. None of it was ours. Sometimes, out of nowhere, that silence would return. No birds, no wind, nothing. And every single time, without fail, my sister and I would notice the faint smell of smoke. There were nights when I'd wake up gasping, certain I'd heard that guttural version of my sister's cry echoing faintly in the dark. Once, while brushing my teeth, I caught sight of a blackened figure in the bathroom mirror. Just a flash, gone before I could even spit the foam from my mouth. Even now, years later, it hasn't completely left us. My sister avoids mirrors. She swears she sometimes sees a burned handprint on her window in the mornings, even though we live in an apartment on the fifth floor. I try to act like it's nothing, like maybe it's just residue from cleaning or something, but I know better. The scariest part is, I still don't know what I saw that day. Maybe my brain filled in blanks. Maybe I was half dreaming on the stairs. Maybe my sister fell, and I just imagined the rest in a panic. That's the kind of reasoning I tell myself when it gets too heavy. But then there are the other times. The black scraps, the smell, the sudden silence. Those don't have easy answers. I've read about houses carrying memories like energy trapped inside walls, and maybe that's it. Maybe my grandma's house saw something terrible, a fire or worse, and we just got caught up in the echoes of it. Or maybe it wasn't the house at all. Maybe she followed us. Because sometimes, in the corner of my eye, I still catch glimpses of that melted face. And every now and then, when I wake up in the middle of the night, there's a weight in the room, like someone else is there, standing over me, watching. I never stay awake long enough to check. Story number four. I had inherited this house from my father 8 years ago. My parents had shifted to a smaller town, leaving behind the two-story wooden house with its old furniture, creaky floors, and heavy silence. It wasn't a mansion, but it carried weight. The kind of place where sound doesn't echo. It sinks. Over the years, I made it my own. The attic became my favorite spot. I had decorated it with shelves of books and a home theater setup, and I spent most of my nights up there, reading or watching movies. It was comfortable, familiar. Until one night, it wasn't. I had fallen asleep in the attic while watching a movie. I remember the sound of the TV droning, the glow flickering against the shelves. Then I felt it, hot air directly against my ear, like someone leaning in to whisper. My eyes snapped open, my heart hammering. The attic was freezing cold, the kind of chill that tightens your skin. The TV was off. That made no sense, because I had drifted off while the movie was still running. As my eyes adjusted to the dark, I noticed the books. Some were scattered on the floor near the shelves, but not fallen, placed, stacked as if someone had been climbing up. It was too deliberate to be random. I stood there frozen for a long minute before leaving and heading to my bedroom downstairs. Just as I was about to shut the door, a loud thud echoed from the attic above me. Not a creak, not a shifting of wood, a solid thud. The next morning, I tried to convince myself I had dreamed the whole thing. Maybe I had turned off the TV half asleep. Maybe the cold was just the draft. Maybe the books had fallen, and I was exaggerating. But something about it gnawed at me. Over the next few weeks, little things began happening. Every time I came home, there would be dead flowers on my porch. Wilted, crushed blossoms, roses, marigolds, daisies. Never fresh, always dying. I didn't have a garden. I didn't even know where someone could be getting them from. I swept them away at first, but they kept reappearing. Always different. Always dead. The air in the attic shifted too. Sometimes, while I sat reading, I'd hear faint scratching above the ceiling boards, like nails dragging against wood. Other times, a smell of damp earth would linger for a few minutes before disappearing. At night, I sometimes woke to what sounded like footsteps just outside my bedroom door, heavy, deliberate, then gone. One weekend, I decided to deep clean the attic, dusting, reorganizing shelves, vacuuming corners. That's when I noticed the closet. It had been locked for as long as I remembered. My father had shut it years ago when we were moving some furniture around, and I never bothered with it. But that day I noticed something that froze me in place. Faint light seeping out from the edges of the closet door. There was no power outlet in that closet. No window. No reason for light to come from inside. My instincts screamed to leave it alone, but curiosity pressed harder. I forced the lock open, The door creaked and the smell hit me first. A wet, rotting stench that burned my nose and clung to my throat. Inside was a skeleton, slumped in the corner. The bones were yellowed, tangled in scraps of fabric. The smell should have been impossible to miss before, yet it had never reached me until the moment I opened the door. The sight punched through every memory I had of this house. I remembered watching my father lock that closet years ago. I was there. It had been empty then, completely empty. I stumbled back, gagging, shaking. For days I avoided the attic. I couldn't eat, couldn't sleep properly. Every time I tried to convince myself it was some kind of old family secret, maybe my father knew, maybe he didn't, another thing would happen to unravel me further. The TV would sometimes flick on by itself, static filling the attic at night. I'd unplug it, only to find it glowing the next evening. My books would be rearranged into stacks and circles when I wasn't home. I once returned to find all the chairs in the attic facing the closet door, like an audience waiting for something to emerge. The flowers never stopped. They grew worse. Once I woke to find a pile of wilted garlands directly on my bed. I couldn't explain how anyone could have gotten inside. The locks weren't broken. The windows were latched. Then came the voices. Not words, just murmurs. Faint as if carried by wind through the cracks. They drifted mostly at night, brushing against my ears. Sometimes it was laughter. Sometimes sighs. Always low, always close. A part of me clung to rational explanations. Maybe someone was breaking in, leaving things behind to mess with me. Maybe my father had hidden something, and the skeleton wasn't what it seemed. Maybe the sounds and chills were just in my head from lack of sleep. But then I remembered the breath, the warmth of it, the deliberate exhale against my skin. Last week, I tried to gather courage and clear the closet out. I bought heavy gloves, trash bags, even lime to mask the smell. But when I opened the closet again, it was empty. No bones, no fabric, no stench. Just dust and darkness. I stood there for a long time, gripping the doorframe, my mind racing. Had I imagined it? No, I couldn't have. The memory of that smell was too sharp. But there was nothing now, nothing at all. Since then, I've stopped trying to explain. The house feels heavier, as though it's watching. I still find flowers, still hear the murmurs, still wake to the footsteps. I haven't stepped into the attic in days, but the thuds from above grow louder each night, almost impatient. I don't know what my father locked away in this house, or what I've woken up by opening that closet. I just know that it's here with me now, and it isn't leaving. Some nights I lie still and wait, holding my breath, and I swear I can feel someone leaning over me, their breath warm against my ear. Story number 5. This happened about 3 years ago, and I've gone back and forth so many times on whether to even share it. It's not my story directly. It's about my best friend Jack. But I was there for the part that still keeps me awake at night. I've told myself that maybe I just imagined it, or maybe there were logical explanations for everything. But deep down, I don't believe that anymore. Jack and I had been close since high school. We had this running tradition of planning trips every couple of years, and that time, it was Alaska. His family owned a little Airbnb up there, sort of a rustic cabin-style place they rented out in the summers. We were supposed to spend 2 weeks hiking, fishing, drinking, just relaxing away from everything. At the last moment, I had to cancel because of a sudden work commitment. I felt like shit for backing out, but I told Jack he should still go. He was the kind of guy who could have fun on his own anyway. He agreed, packed, and left. At least that's what I thought. A week later, I wrapped up work earlier than expected and decided to surprise him by flying out. I didn't even tell him I was coming. I figured it'd be funny. Plus, we'd get our trip anyway. When I finally reached the Airbnb, though, something was immediately wrong. The first thing I noticed was the silence. Normally, those cabins weren't isolated. You could hear the wind in the trees, maybe distant cars or the sound of a river nearby. But when I got out of the car, there was nothing, not even birds, just a heavy, pressing quiet that felt unnatural. The cabin door wasn't locked, so I went inside. It looked like someone had been there recently. Jack's duffel bag was in the corner, his hiking boots by the door. But the bag was completely empty. No clothes, no toiletries, not even a phone charger. The place looked staged, like someone had set his things down just to make it look like he was staying there. I tried calling him, but his phone was off. I thought maybe he'd gone out for a hike or into town, but I started to feel uneasy. To check, I called his girlfriend back home, casually asking if she'd heard from him. Her voice went cold. She told me Jack never even went to Alaska. She said he'd canceled last minute, said he was staying with his parents instead. That's when the dread started sinking in. Either she was lying, or I was standing in a cabin with Jack's luggage and no Jack. I went into town and started asking around. Most people shrugged or didn't know him, but one older man squinted and said he thought he'd seen someone matching Jack's description. He said the guy had been walking toward the cemetery just outside town a couple of nights ago. I don't know what made me believe him, but I headed that way. By the time I got to the cemetery, the sun was already dropping. The place was small, ringed by tall pines with lichen-covered stones that leaned in strange angles like they were trying to climb out of the ground. The air felt colder there than anywhere else I'd been that day. I walked between the rows, my shoes crunching on brittle leaves. That's when I felt it, something tugging at my ankle. At first, I thought I'd snagged on a root or wire, but when I looked down, my leg was free. Nothing was there. The feeling lingered, though, like cold fingers brushing my skin. I laughed it off nervously and lit a cigarette, trying to push down the unease. That's when I heard it, a violent, rasping cough right behind me. It sounded exactly like someone inhaling smoke the wrong way. I spun around, and for a fraction of a second, I saw him, Jack, standing just beyond the gravestones, looking at me. My stomach dropped. But before I could even move, he was gone. Just empty rows of granite markers, shadows stretching long in the fading light. I told myself it was exhaustion or stress, maybe the nicotine playing tricks on me. I was halfway convinced of that until I caught something in the corner of my eye. Two glowing eyes deep in the tree line. They weren't like animal eyes reflecting light. They were too steady, too deliberate, watching me. I stepped toward them, half hypnotized, and that's when my foot slipped on the edge of a hole in the ground. My body lurched forward, and my stomach dropped as I realized what I'd almost fallen into. It wasn't just a grave. It was a pit, dug far deeper than it should have been. Raw earth dropping straight down into blackness. Too deep to see the bottom. Too deep for anyone to climb out of without help. I froze, staring into it. And for a second, I swore I heard breathing coming from inside. Not wind, not echoes. Breathing. Slow and ragged, like someone waiting. I staggered back, nearly tripping again, my pulse hammering. When I looked up, the glowing eyes were gone. Just trees. Just shadows. I didn't wait around. I bolted out of there, half expecting something to grab me again, half expecting to hear Jack's voice calling me back. The next few days were a blur. I reported Jack missing. I called his parents. I drove around asking more locals, but every lead dissolved into nothing. No one else admitted to seeing him. No one could explain why his luggage was there, but empty. No police report ever came back with anything useful. It was like Jack had just vanished. And I'll admit, the skeptic in me still tries to piece it together. Maybe Jack had planned something else and left his stuff there. Maybe the man I spoke to in town was mistaken. Maybe the figure in the cemetery was just a trick of the light, my brain desperate to find answers. Maybe the hole was just an open grave that hadn't been filled yet. But I can't shake the feeling I had that night, the cold grip on my ankle, the coughing behind me when no one was there. The glowing eyes were pulling me toward that pit, as if something wanted me to fall in. It's been 3 years and Jack has never turned up. Not a phone call, not a body, not a single trace. It's like he existed one day and was gone the next. I don't know if the cemetery took him. I don't know if I narrowly avoided the same fate. All I know is that sometimes, when I close my eyes, I can still feel the tug on my ankle, dragging me down. And sometimes, in the dead of night, I wake up choking on smoke, hearing that same violent cough in the dark, like someone else is in the room with me. Story number 6. I had been living in the ranger's cabin for a little over 3 months. The woods were dense and alive in ways I hadn't expected when I first took the job. Everyone always talked about the peace and solitude that came with being a park ranger. But I quickly learned that peace was a fragile thing out here. The animals weren't just dangerous. They were unpredictable. Coyotes crying at night, bears rummaging through trash, even raccoons scratching against the wood when I tried to sleep. I had grown used to the noises, the wild patterns of the forest, the sense that I was an uninvited guest. But what happened that night didn't feel like the woods anymore. It felt like something else entirely. It was around 11 p.m. I had just started drifting into that half-sleep where sounds blur together and your body feels heavier than it should. My radio crackled on the table beside me, loud enough to jolt me upright. The voice was muffled, almost buried under static, but I could swear I heard my name. I rubbed my face, sat up, and blinked hard to clear the fog of sleep. For a brief second, in the dim orange glow of my lamp, I saw something low to the ground, long, jointed, crawling toward me. I froze. My heart went straight to my throat. I forced myself to look harder, but by the time my eyes adjusted, there was nothing. Just the table, my boots, and the faint shine of the wood floor. I told myself it had to be my eyes playing tricks, the way shadows warp when you wake up suddenly. I swung my legs off the bed, still on edge. That's when the whole cabin shifted. No, not shifted, spiraled. The walls and floor spun so fast it felt like I was caught inside a tornado. My body slammed against the mattress. My head felt like someone was driving nails into my skull. I couldn't move. I couldn't even breathe right. My teeth clenched so hard I thought they'd crack. Then just as quickly as it started, everything stopped. The cabin was still, silent. My head was clear, as though nothing had happened. I lay there trying to convince myself it had been some kind of vertigo episode, but when I finally tilted my head up, the ceiling made my stomach drop. There were red streaks across the wood, like something had been dragged, forcefully, deliberately. Long, uneven lines, darker in some patches, almost like handprints had smeared through it. The marks hadn't been there before. I dressed quickly, my hands shaking so badly I could barely button my shirt. I grabbed the radio, clicked it on, and was met with nothing but static. Thick, heavy static that filled the room like a living thing. I turned the dial, tried every channel I knew, but it didn't change. And then, all at once, every window in the cabin rattled. Not just a soft tremor, but like someone was slamming the glass with their fists over and over. Yet when I looked outside, the trees were still. The sky was clear. No wind. No storm. It went on for maybe a minute, maybe less. I honestly couldn't tell. And then it stopped. Dead silence. The kind of silence that makes your ears ring because your brain can't understand why there's no sound at all. I sat there clutching the radio to my chest, staring at the door like I expected someone or something to walk in. I didn't sleep. I couldn't. The next morning, I dragged myself to the main ranger station. My eyes were bloodshot, my hands trembling as I asked if anyone had called me on the radio during the night. They pulled up the logs. Nothing. No call placed. No transmission to my unit. It wasn't possible, they said, but I heard it. For the rest of the day, I tried to shake it off, but the unease clung to me. I kept replaying every second. The crawling shape, the spiraling room, the red marks, the rattling glass. I wanted some kind of explanation. I thought maybe carbon monoxide, though we had detectors. Maybe sleep paralysis, though I was awake and moving. Vertigo, migraine, hallucination, every possible medical reason I could think of, I tried to make it fit. But none of it explained the ceiling. That night I went back to the cabin reluctantly. I left the lights on. The streaks on the ceiling were still there, faint in the daytime but unmistakable. I thought about painting over them, but something in me couldn't, like touching them would make it worse. Around midnight, I heard it again, not the radio this time, a sound outside, slow, deliberate footsteps circling the cabin. I held my breath, waiting for them to stop. They didn't. They kept pacing, crunching over leaves, circling and circling, until I thought I'd lose my mind. I flicked off the light, pressed my face to the window, and saw nothing but the tree line. No person, no animal, just the woods. At 2 a.m., the smell hit me, metallic, heavy, the kind of smell that makes your throat close up. Blood. It seeped in, filling the cabin so thickly that I gagged. I searched every inch of the floor, every corner, even outside on the porch, but there was nothing. By morning, the smell was gone. The following week blurred together. Sometimes I'd hear scratching on the walls when the woods were quiet. Sometimes I'd wake to find the furniture moved. Just slightly, like a chair nudged out from the table or the radio shifted a few inches. One night I found the front door wide open, though I knew I'd locked it. Another night, the ceiling marks had multiplied, spreading further across the wood like veins. I told myself I was imagining it, that maybe exhaustion was twisting my perception. But when the static returned, when it bled through the radio, even when it was switched off, I realized I couldn't explain it away anymore. Still, I stayed. It was my job, after all. And maybe deep down, I didn't want to leave, because leaving meant admitting something was wrong, something I couldn't fix or rationalize. It's been weeks since the first night. The ceiling is nearly covered now. The static comes and goes. The windows still rattle even when the air outside is dead calm. And sometimes I still smell that metallic tang in the air. Every so often, I catch a glimpse of something crawling in the corner of my eye. Always low to the ground. Always gone when I look. I don't know if I'm losing my mind or if the woods have decided I'm not supposed to be here. Maybe both. All I know is the silence doesn't feel peaceful anymore. It feels watchful. And every night, just before I fall asleep, I can't shake the feeling that the call I heard on the radio wasn't meant to reach me by mistake. Story number 7. Finding a decent apartment in New York was like winning a lottery. Rent was insane. Places were cramped, and most of what I could afford looked like fire hazards or rat nests. So when I stumbled across this one bedroom with a decent view and, surprisingly, a separate storage room, it felt like I had struck gold. The landlord was a quiet man who didn't ask many questions, and the rent was weirdly reasonable. I signed the lease without thinking twice and moved in within a few weeks. For the first month or so, everything was fine. The apartment wasn't perfect. Old paint, creaky floorboards, faint smell of mildew that never quite left. But I could live with that. What mattered was that it was mine. Then one evening, out of nowhere, every single electrical appliance in the apartment shut down. Lights, fridge, microwave, even my phone charger. Total blackout, except the hallway bulb outside my unit flickered like nothing was wrong. I thought it was a blown fuse, so I grabbed my flashlight and went looking for the meter box. The landlord had told me it was in the storage room at the end of the hall, but when I tried to get in, it was locked with an old rusty padlock. I didn't have much patience, so I grabbed a hammer and broke the lock. The door creaked open to reveal the kind of damp, stale smell you only get in places that haven't been touched for years. My flashlight beam cut through dust particles floating thick in the air. The fuse box was mounted on the wall, but nothing seemed out of place. When I flicked on the overhead switch, the dim bulb buzzed to life, and that's when I noticed it. In the middle of the room stood a glass cabinet, like one you'd see in a museum. Inside it hung a wedding dress, white once, but now yellowed with age, stained across the midsection with a black blotch, almost like dried ink or rot. Around the dress, small dark flecks peppered the fabric. The rest of the room was cluttered with old wedding decorations, faded streamers, cracked plastic bouquets, broken candles, boxes of dusty invitations with names smudged into nothing. It looked like someone had packed up a wedding and buried it here to rot. I told myself I'd clear it all out the next morning, lock the room back up, and maybe mention it to the landlord. That night I tried to sleep, but just as I was drifting off, I heard something faint. Bells, wedding bells, ringing softly, as if from a church far away. Then the sound of a choir, voices harmonizing in a hollow, ghostly way. I sat up, heart pounding, and walked around the apartment. Nothing. Silence. When I lay back down, the sounds returned. Bells, choir, faint organ music, as if they lived in the walls themselves. Over the next few days, the noises didn't stop. Every night, without fail, the bells would start up. Some nights it was just one faint chime. Others, it was a full procession of music. I could almost picture people walking down aisles that didn't exist. At first, I thought maybe it was coming from a nearby church, but the timing made no sense. It always started around midnight and ended just before dawn. Then stranger things began to happen. I started scribbling on scraps of paper, prayers, half-legible words, sometimes just crosses repeated over and over. I wasn't religious, had never been, but the urge was overwhelming, like someone else was moving my hand. Out of nowhere, I felt compelled to look up convents, nun practices, holy rituals. My search history started to look like I was preparing to join some cloistered life. My body began to fail me too. Constant fatigue, heavy chest, weight loss. I went to a doctor, ran tests, but they came back with nothing. They told me to eat better, drink water, get rest. I wanted to scream at them that rest was impossible when bells rang through your walls every night. The apartment itself changed. The storage room would sometimes be unlocked, even though I swore I closed it. Once I walked by and thought I heard faint crying from inside. Another time, the smell of incense wafted into my kitchen, though I owned nothing like that. And one morning, I found one of the faded wedding invitations slipped under my bedroom door. The paper was damp, the ink smeared, and I don't even want to describe what the dark flakes stuck to it looked like. The final night was what broke me. It was raining hard, wind whipping through the cracks of the old window frames. I don't remember when I woke up, but I found myself standing barefoot on the cold floor of my bedroom. My hands were trembling, and when I looked down, I froze. I was wearing the wedding dress, the same one from the cabinet, heavy and damp against my skin, the stain at the chest glaring under the dim streetlight filtering in. I don't know how I got into it or when. My head was foggy, like I was underwater, and I was moving, walking toward the balcony, pushing open the sliding door, rain soaking the fabric. The music was deafening now, bells, choir, voices chanting words I couldn't understand. The air was thick with incense, choking me. I climbed onto the railing, the city lights blurring below. My body leaned forward as if it wasn't mine anymore, as if something wanted me to take the step. I felt calm, weirdly calm, like it was what I was meant to do. Then the doorbell rang. The sound cut through everything. The bells, the voices, the haze. It all shattered for a moment. I stumbled back inside, ripping at the dress until it tore away from me. When I looked around, the music was gone. Only the storm remained. I opened the front door, but no one was there. The hallway was empty, water dripping from the ceiling, and the storage room door hung open again, swinging slightly with the draft. That was the last straw. I left that night, didn't pack much, didn't even look back at the place. The landlord never contacted me, never asked for the keys. It's like he expected me not to last. To this day, I can't explain it. Some people tell me I was hallucinating, that maybe I had a breakdown from stress, maybe even sleepwalking. But then how do I explain the dress, heavy and damp against my skin? How do I explain the invitations that appeared in my room? Sometimes, late at night, I swear I can still hear faint wedding bells through the walls of my new apartment, and I can't shake the thought that maybe one night, when it rains hard enough, the doorbell will ring again. Thanks for watching. Don't leave before leaving a like to this video. Also, hit the subscribe button to support my work. And as always, have a horrific nightmare, my dear.
Wayfair's Labor Day clearance is here. Right now, score up to 70% off everything home, plus fast shipping on everything right to your door. Shop now through September 2nd at wayfair.com.
Wayfair, every style, every home.
Lowe's knows that no matter your paint project, saving is at the top of your list. That's why when you shop today, you can buy one, get one free select Valspar and HGTV Home by Sherwin-Williams one coat coverage interior paints via rebate. Shop these deals in-store or online today at Lowe's. We help, you save. Selection varies by location while supplies last. Discount taken at time of purchase. See sales associate for details. Offer valid 8/21 through 9/3.